Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations, where we dive into topics around mental health, adversity, spirituality, and societal issues. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia, and join me in this week's episode where I sit down with Luke Shillings as he bravely opens up about his tumultuous journey through infidelity and the subsequent path toward healing and co-parenting. Join us as Luke shares the raw and unfiltered story of betrayal, heartache, and redemption. As Luke delves into the painful experience of discovering his partner's infidelity, listeners are offered a glimpse into the profound impact it had on his life and his family dynamics. Through this narrative, we witness the roller coaster of emotions he endured, from shock and disbelief to anger, and then seeing past that. And amongst the wreckage of this trust, Luke found the strength to embark on a journey of self-discovery and forgiveness. He shares with us the pivotal moments of introspection and growth that allowed him to transcend bitterness and resentment, choosing instead the path of compassion and understanding. Join us as we navigate the complexities of infidelity, forgiveness, and co-parenting with Luke in an episode that promises to inspire and uplift. Luke is a 40-something father of two, a runner, problem solver, podcast host, business owner, and a relationship and infidelity coach. You can find him online at his website, www.lifecoachluke.com. And please check out all the other ways you can find Luke on social media, including his podcast, After the Affair. And please leave a review or a comment in the comment section at the end of the episode. I would truly appreciate it. And a brief word for our sponsors. One thing that's really helped my mental health is a daily routine. Every morning, after doing some breathing exercises and cold exposure, I like a smooth cup of coffee. I've been drinking Four Sigmatics coffee for the last 3 years, and it's been very beneficial for my routine. I especially like their Lion's Mane and Chaga Mushrooms coffee, which helps me with my mental focus and energy every morning. Four Sigmatics is on a mission to infuse functional mushrooms into the foods and supplements people love and use daily. Their goal is to enrich minds and improve well-being. By pairing Lion's Mane with coffee for focus or reishi with cacao for a sense of calm, their brews, blends, and powders get everyone in a good headspace so they can focus on what matters most. Check out Four Sigmatics and use the code EASYCONVERSATIONS, all one word, at checkout for 10% off your order. Today's episode is also sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy can be very difficult for many people to start. In my personal experience, when I was going through my divorce, therapy allowed me to bridge a significant gap. With the help and support of my therapist, I was able to uncover a lot of repeated patterns and behaviors that were impacting my life. Through goal setting, I was able to focus on things that required attention, which allowed me to improve the relationship that I had with myself and, by extension, the relationship that I had with others. As a therapist, I've been able to see the positive benefits that clients are able to derive through healthy rapport and goal setting. BetterHelp allows a lot of flexibility where clients can schedule video sessions, sessions on the phone, or through messaging. In most cases, BetterHelp will match you up with a licensed therapist within 48 hours. If that's not a good fit for you, BetterHelp will work with you to find the right fit. Join over 4 million users today by following the link in the description or going to BetterHelp, that's H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/easy10 to get 10% off your first month of therapy. Luke, welcome to the Easy Conversations podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I'm really grateful for you to take the time and have this conversation with me also been fortunate enough to come on your podcast and have similar dialogue, I guess, fairly recently. But yeah, I'm really excited for what we're going to talk about. It's not an easy topic by any means, but it's necessary because I'm sure a lot of people have gone through similar journeys or have struggled with something similar. And I'm hoping that there is something that people can take out of this conversation, as I hope with all conversations. But before we get started, I do want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to the listeners, share a little bit about what it is that you do, and perhaps people can figure out where you're based just simply from your accent. But yeah, I'll turn it over to you.
Perfect. Thank you ever so much for having me. And yes, of course, I return the thank you for having you on my podcast. It was an absolute pleasure and a great conversation that we had as well. So my name is Luke Shillings. I am based in the UK. I live in a city called Lincoln, which is about 2 hours north of London on the east side of the country. I have grown up and lived in this area pretty much my entire life. I am a father of two, a divorced father of two. And I suppose professionally, I spent most of my life not knowing what on earth it was I wanted to do with my life. And I've done quite a range of things during that time. But currently, I'm a podcast host, obviously, but also a relationship and infidelity recovery coach. And I help those who are paralyzed by betrayal move forward, make changes, make clear decisions in their life, and use that painful situation as the catalyst to create things that they probably never imagined were possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I suppose, which is a very common theme, at least what I've experienced just doing this podcast for the last 3 years, is often people like myself struggle with figuring out what they want to do in life, and that it's a journey. So we are, we'll stumble upon different things. Like I chose a profession or for many years, realizing that it wasn't fulfilling me at one point, especially as I was embarking on a different direction in my life. And my own life experiences led me to where I am today, including having this podcast and talking about things that I'm always thinking about and hoping that can deliver value or help other people with their purpose. With you, why are you doing what you do, and why did you end up here, considering you've done several things throughout your life and on this journey? So why are you passionate about helping people in this space?
So I suppose it started unbeknowingly to me, or at least my introduction into this field, if you like, when I was 4 years old. And that was when my own mum and dad, my mother and father, separated. My father had an affair and he moved out and went to live with the affair partner. And over the next few years, they had two more children of their own, which became my half-sisters. And during my, you know, I was 4 years old at the time. My sister was weeks old, literally. And it was obviously a very challenging time for my mum, of course. She did an amazing job, certainly from my perspective. It's strange. I don't really have that many memories, or if I don't really have any memories of it being like a particularly sad or negative experience at the time when I was that young. Mm-hmm. If anything, it affected me more during my teenage years, seeing my dad come and go all the time. And he came to see us regularly, but it was still a lot of coming and going. And I remember certainly at one point I felt like I'd have rather that maybe he either didn't come back, or even on some days wished he wasn't alive, because at least I wouldn't have to keep saying goodbye. And so there was a lot of sort of instability in my own mind as a teenage boy. And of course, it's a challenging time for humans anyway. During those years, there's lots of changes going on, trying to figure out who you are and you want and what you want to do. And I think I got to the end of my school years really not knowing what it was that I wanted to do. And like many people, usually if you've uncomfortable or you're unfamiliar with something, you're uncertain, then you look externally. You look at what everybody else is doing. You look at the people across the road. You look at my peers and my classmates. And at the time, they were predominantly doing college, A-levels, and going on to university. And so I started by going down that same path. But I also got a job in a hospitality, just a pub restaurant not far from where I lived. Pot washing and then a bit of waitering and working in the kitchens and basically anything that they would let me do and pay me for, I would do. And that's like how I've been with every place that I've worked. I've always taken on over and above what it was that was probably initially laid out for me. And that, just having that freedom, it was the first time I started to get an actual paycheck. I was starting to get the little brown envelope with cash in it, and it felt pretty cool. And that was drawing me more than the education at that particular point in my life. And I ended up not completing my A-levels and focusing on work. And I went to work in the hospitality industry with the goal of becoming an area manager for one of the local pub or the national pub companies. For a combination of reasons, that ended up not being an option anymore. A particular door closed. And I felt myself a bit of, I'm not really sure I can go any further with this. Although I remained working part-time in hospitality for the following years, I ended up then basically doing a multitude of jobs. I trained to be a driving instructor. I spent 2 or 3 years repairing cars, learning how to paint spray and do bodywork and things like that, and a combination of other things. But a few years later, the pub that I'd very originally worked at, the one in my own village where I grew up, actually became available for sale. And I'd saved a bit of money. I borrowed a bit of money and a bit of help from the family and decided to go all in. I bought the lease on this pub. And for the next 4 years, I worked essentially 100-hour weeks doing every job that there was. I did have quite a big team, but it was a very an ongoing concern. And although I was I felt quite skilled in hospitality, this was a whole new package. Again, that's a whole story in itself, but ultimately that came to a point where I couldn't make it work long term. And I was left with no choice but to declare myself bankrupt, really, before anybody else came in and took that power away from me. So that's what I did. And it was at this point that I had met my wife-to-be. And up until this point, I'd always told myself that I never wanted to get married. And that was really quite simply just because I never wanted to get divorced. I didn't want to see what, I didn't want to experience what my mum and dad had experienced. I didn't want to put my potential for children through that either. And so there was, I suppose it was just like a safe bet. If I don't get married, I can't get divorced. But of course, I met my wife-to-be and my brain offered me some other thoughts and feelings at the time. And very quickly, I changed my mind. So we did get engaged. We got married. And then during this time, even just during the time when I was engaged, I'd gone to work for a restaurant or a hotel as a restaurant manager. And then I was made redundant. And it's like I'd had a couple of fairly big hits. When I came out of the pub, I lost my income. I lost my home. I, again, didn't really know what on earth it was I was going to do with my life. I still didn't feel like I had that fulfilling thing. So I then put my attention into my wife and building a family and the home and everything that goes around us. We bought the house. We say we had 2 children. And I love being married. I love that life. I mean, it wasn't always easy. We both worked full time, 2 young children. It became routine and I suppose somewhat monotonous. And maybe there was even a particular where we were disconnecting, but maybe I wasn't as aware of that. I think I just put it down to being that's how that part of my life should be, given the circumstances. It turns out that maybe wasn't quite what my wife was experiencing, because by the time we'd been married for 8 years and she had an affair with one of my best friends, or certainly a very close friend, at least. And ultimately, long story short, we ended up separating and divorcing. She remained in a relationship with the affair partner and he gradually became more and more integrated into my children's life. I moved away from the family home, which was challenging. It was the most logical, and even now on reflection, I still think it was the right thing to do based on all the things at the time, but it was still a very difficult thing to do. It's like, why is daddy leaving? Which was really challenging. And then I was at this point where I've had this blank canvas for my life. I don't really know. At this point, I've been working in a completely different industry. I've been working in manufacturing for the previous 10 years. I'd worked for the same employer, started at the bottom, built my way up to the top. Again, pretty much the pattern that tended to follow me wherever I went and whatever I did. But it wasn't really fulfilling. And many of the reasons that I'd remained there for so long was they didn't exist anymore. So I started to look elsewhere, and I stumbled across coaching and started to learn and utilize many of the tools that I started to, you know, pick up on. They fell in line really nicely with my own previous experience. And there was a lot of validation, if I'm honest. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, actually I dealt with that really well, all things considered. I didn't realize it was a healthy boundary, but actually that was a really good example of it. And so that felt really good. And I recognized that there was more to it than just it making me feel good. I felt like I could do something with it. I felt very natural at it. And when I was having conversations with people, I was able to get concepts and ideas across. So I thought, actually, this could be something that I could actually focus on much more specifically. So I decided I wanted to do it properly. And I became certified through the Life Coach School in the US. And then essentially, I'm going to start and build my business. And who is it that I want to help? And of course, the biggest pain that I'd experienced, certainly in the recent years and probably throughout my whole life, was the experience of betrayal, the experience of infidelity, having that rug pulled from underneath your feet, and then having to deal with the aftermath, no matter what that looked like. And so that's exactly what I did. And I started my journey as an infidelity recovery coach a couple of years ago. I launched my own podcast about a year ago, and the rest is history so far, as they say.
Yeah. Thank you for all of that. And thank you for being so open and vulnerable. There's a few things I'd like to explore with you. I think, first of all, just early on, as a child who was part of that divorce, or obviously an affair with your parents' relationship ultimately ending, how was it for you? Like you said, yeah, it was very tough to say goodbye to your father. And what was there any part of you that was resentful towards him as part of saying those goodbyes? And then even as a teenager, were like, obviously as teenage boys, we want that father figure in our lives. So how was all of that for you? What would you have wanted, and where were you finding that sense of role model in your life?
Yeah. So yeah, to the first part, how did I feel about him? And there was a lot of cognitive dissonance. There was a lot of disconnect in terms of what I felt, because obviously I love my dad. We had a good relationship. And in a way, that's probably what made it harder. If I didn't like him, or I hated him, or didn't want to be around him, or he was bad news, or treated my mum crap, or whatever, then maybe it would have been easier in some ways. But of course, that's not how I felt. And this has been something that's replicated itself throughout my whole life, where there's been like maybe a societal expectation of how I thought I should feel based on what I've seen externally versus what I was actually feeling. And of course, when you get that and you've got one part saying this and one part saying that, you get this inner conflict, and you start to struggle to trust your own judgment. So I suppose there was a bit of trying to, like you say, when you come into your teenage years and you're trying to figure out your identity. Who am I? Although you're not really necessarily asking that question out loud in the same way that we might reflect on it now. At the time, that is ultimately what's going on. It's like, how do I interact with different groups of people? How do I guess, and how do I want, and how do I want to move forward, and what is it I want, and what are my relationships, and what do they look like? So when it came to my dad specifically, there was this sort of, I wanted to spend more time with him. I wanted him to be around more. I don't really remember ever wanting like him and mum to get back together. I don't think that was ever like a specific thing. I just wanted more time with my dad. That was like the real thing. And I really didn't like his now partner, actively despised. And I'm sure I've said some very terrible things about her over the years and certainly felt them. And it's, they're not together anymore, but it's, it, that was challenging just to have this such a wonderful experience when he was there. And then, of course, with his work, he often worked overseas and he gradually moved over the years further and further away from where we live, to the point where now he actually lives in Malaysia. So he couldn't really live much further away. But this gradually increased over the years. So the times that we saw him became like, there were bigger gaps, let's put it that way. Yeah. And of course, part of that was, you know, we were getting older, all the things. But that was challenging, for definite. And then in terms of, did I feel like there was a hole to fill? And obviously, I wasn't consciously aware of it at the time, but reflecting back, my uncle played one definite role. I would see him quite regularly, and there's definitely things that were probably already natural within me, but he offered me the space to be able to explore that side of my interests, let's say. And then on the other side, I'd met one of my closest friends when I started secondary school at the age of 11 or 12, and still good friends with him now. And I spent an awful lot of time with him and his family. And he had five sisters or six sisters. I can't remember now, at least five. It was a reasonable sized family. And his father actually played a very significant role during those years, during those teenage years. And actually, he actually died of cancer for far too young. And I remember, although it wasn't quite like losing a dad, it certainly had a much deeper impact on me than it, than any of my other friends' parents, let's put it that way. So yeah, on reflection, he definitely played a part. And it was very contrasting to like my uncle as well. So it's, yeah, maybe there was an element there, which I didn't, didn't really realize I was seeking it, but I definitely felt a lot of comfort from it.
And it sounds like, and maybe you can shed some light on it too, but obviously there was a pain from the breakup of your parents, and then the fact that your father wasn't around as much as you would have liked. So there's that pain and perhaps even anger. Do you feel like a lot of that was then being projected towards your father's partner?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Definitely bypassed. And it's interesting because when I then moved that forward to my own experience with infidelity, actually the same thing. The anger wasn't really towards my wife. Obviously, I was very upset and very hurt and very shocked and all the things. So I'm happy to share more if needs be. But the point is, for drawing that sort of comparison, most of my internal anger that I felt initially was directed at him rather than her. And obviously, in my dad's relationship, it was at her, the affair partner, rather than him. Even though, obviously, the reality is they're both equally a part in this dynamic. I suppose we could argue that in both cases, one person has more to lose than the other, but ultimately it does take two. It made it hard as well. Just thinking about that. Yeah. It actually made it hard for a while building a relationship or a good relationship with my two half-sisters. Now, we're actually really close now and have been for many years now, but certainly again during those teen years, because it was just a reminder. It was just that they were the result of the affair in a lot of ways, and at least that's how I saw it at the time. Again, looking through a different lens now makes a big difference, but certainly at the time, I felt a lot of resentment, a lot.
And then you've touched on your own experience of going through it. I mean, you went over the whole experience, but at any point did you, as you were going through it, talk to one of your parents about what it was like for them to maybe get some meaning for yourself or how to navigate it? And then, let's maybe go there and follow up.
Interestingly, I didn't talk to anybody about it to begin with. Certainly whilst during the stage where, so again, for the sake of a timeline clarity, if you like, their friendship started to form probably over about a period of 6 months prior to the point where I actually discovered, like what we define as D-Day, if you like, when I discovered. And during that period of time, I felt very paranoid. I was really unsure, really uncertain. I was convinced something was going on, but I couldn't prove it. There was a lot of denial, some stonewalling, a bit of gaslighting. And so that was really quite frightening in a lot of ways, because it's like, well, what if I'm wrong? What if I'm just misinterpreting this situation? What if it's actually my paranoia that actually makes the relationship come to an end? I loved my wife, and mm-hmm. it's not like there was a history of betrayal or lying, at least not to my knowledge. So mm-hmm. that was very difficult. Mm-hmm. Now, so at that point, I didn't speak to my parents. And I told them not that long after it had finally come out, probably a couple of days after, maybe. Certainly my mum, it was my mum that I spoke to first. And to be fair, she works in mental health and actually mm-hmm. is similar sort of trainings to me in terms of how she is with people. She's a fantastic listener, and she's mm-hmm. not one for saying, oh, we should do it this way, or we should do it that way, or we should do it the other way, or here's what you should, and here's this, and here's that. It was much more just holding that space for me, mm-hmm. which was great. And as it happened, as I then came to talk to my dad a bit more, the same was true of him as well. And I was much more worried about my dad's thoughts about it than I was my mum's. I think in part because my dad had always been quite bitter about relationships that had failed in his life. He's done quite well for himself financially, and these failed relationships ended up being a financial expense. Obviously, it was an emotional expense, of course, as well. Huge. Mm-hmm. And we've spoken mm-hmm. much more about that recently, which I didn't really see that. You hid that mm-hmm. very well. In fact, it's really only been in the last year or so that I've become more aware of what he went through mm-hmm. at the time emotionally. I didn't realize to what depths he'd struggled. Mm-hmm. He certainly hid it well from me. And I think mm-hmm. I can say the same is true for my mum as well. Like I say, from when I was a child, I really didn't feel like everything was pretty good. Okay, right. There was this fact that my dad was coming and going. There was never any arguments. It was, mum and dad were quite comfortable in the same room together, or at least it seemed that way. We'd, mm-hmm. we'd occasionally go and do things together as a family. And again, of course, when it came to my situation and I moved out, I modeled that anyway. It just seemed like the natural thing to do. I don't want to make the kids suffer unnecessarily. You know, I already had this rule about not getting married so I can't get divorced. And I've mm-hmm. broken that, but it's the last thing I'm going to do now is try and make the kids a pawn in the very unpleasant game of chess, let's say. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to work very intentionally on the co-parenting relationship. Although I didn't really seek specific advice from my parents and like, how did you deal with it, this, that, and the other, what I did do, I obviously had observed in a lot of detail how they had dealt with it, and then used that as my framework, or at least a basic framework to then process myself. So yes, indirectly, I definitely did learn from them, but it wasn't really through conversation. We have spoken more in recent years, which has obviously unpicked other things for me, but that was after I'd processed and healed and moved forward anyway.
And I guess, obviously, to be on the receiving end of something like that, there's a lot of pain. And I guess what I was wondering was, were you able to understand both sides of it by talking to your parents? But I think it seems like you just were more focused on modeling the parenting side of it rather
Certainly when it came to actually me moving out, and it's like, okay, what is it I want going forward? Because really, it's like, I really did feel like I knew what the next 5 or 10 years would look like. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden didn't know what tomorrow looked like. So I didn't know where to look. So mm-hmm. all I could do was focus on something that seemed solid and stable. Mm-hmm. And the children were mm-hmm. that thing. They were my focal point. But interestingly enough, right at the very beginning, so when I first moved out, I found it extremely difficult. I remember the very first weekend that the kids came to stay with me. And I still struggle thinking about it sometimes because I felt so much resentment towards them. And it was just so unexpected. I never thought I would feel that way. And I couldn't understand why I felt that way to begin with. But of course, they were the reason I couldn't just have a clean cut. We were getting divorced at that point from my wife, essentially. I think what my body wanted, the pain was so intense that my body and my mind wanted to just run away. It wanted to escape. And had I been, had no kids, I probably would have upped and left and moved to Malaysia and spent six months with my dad and done something different. I honestly believe that was like very real possibility for me. But because of the kids, that was never, I never even considered that an option. I was never going to be one of these dads that just disappeared off the scene.
Right.
Never to be seen again. Not even a thought.
Yeah.
So that resentment was really bizarre because they were, or at least it seemed, the reason I couldn't just have that clean cut, that clean slate and process. Yeah. I had to face everything head on. And of course, because I was also wanting to replicate this, not just replicate it, but I actually wanted it. I wasn't doing it just to copy my mum and dad. Right. I was doing it because I actually wanted to have a good co-parenting relationship. I wanted my children to feel like they were still loved by both parents. And even though we no longer live together, that wasn't the end for them. It was just like, this is just a new thing that we're now going to learn and adapt and adjust to. So it took a little bit of while, to get over that resentment. And it was really unpleasant. I remember sitting here and going, I just don't want to interact with them. I don't want to do anything. And I felt awful. And then, of course, then I felt even worse for feeling that way. It was like a double whammy. Really unpleasant. But over time, that did dissipate. And then I was able to really focus on putting the children as my initial priority. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, my wife was also, that was a pretty big priority for her as well. So it's not like we're at constant conflict and battle. And I've always been quite calm natured anyway, even in these more extreme circumstances. So I was able to deal with things in a way that didn't spark too much unnecessary conflict. Maybe I felt like I had the upper hand a little bit as well, because I wasn't the one that had betrayed. She didn't, it's not like she was pointing the finger at me. It was all my fault. I'm a terrible husband, this, that, and the other. That's why it happened. It wasn't really like that. If anything, it was more a case we drifted, or she drifted away, and it was a shining light. And then all of a sudden, there was these things being fulfilled that she didn't even realize were missing. And of course, when she went to spend time with the affair partner, it was free of all of the struggles and challenges of the day-to-day life of working and having the kids and doing all the things. Does that mean that I didn't play a part in, was I perfect? No, not, of course not. And it's been a really quite interesting journey, being able to reflect back and look at, obviously I was not to blame in any way, shape or form when it comes, infidelity is the choice of the person who betrays and it can never be anything else. But were there things that I could have done differently? Or were there things that I might have wanted to do differently? Had I just taken my eye off the ball? Had I maybe gone into a relationship like many people do, thinking that you do that like honeymoon period at the beginning, there's all that lust, there's all that emotion, and you do discuss things and you figure things out, and then it's really exciting. Then it's like a roller coaster towards, let's say, marriage. And then we actually found out we were pregnant on our honeymoon. And everything's just like going. And it's often several years before you even, you realize that actually we've not actually had a conversation about what the future looks like since it's before we got married. And I think many people do the same. And that's often what creates that disconnect and creates that separation. And if that's not maintained by at least one member of the relationship, then it's always a danger zone.
Of course. Yeah. Where we started with this piece, you're talking about the kids and having that resentment, but I suppose even with the kids and as you touched on not having that clean break, I think every time seeing them or even interacting with your ex was a reminder of what had happened.
Right. And of course, she remained in the relationship with the affair partner as well.
Right.
So he was gradually becoming more and more integrated in my children's life. And of course, they already knew him. So it's not like, so it was really easy in that sense. At least that's how I saw it. Oh yeah, so he's just gonna stroll along and take my position. Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like.
Yes.
Yeah, and the kids would come over and they'd be like, oh yeah, he's took us out for ice cream this weekend or bought me this. And of course, I would never want to stop my kids from experiencing and feeling love from because they would be the ones that suffer. They would be the ones that miss out from that. Mm. Knowing that it was coming from him, and that was tough. Tough.
Yeah.
It was really, really hard. So their relationship ended. It lasted for about a year, and it did finally come to an end, which I'd be lying if I didn't. I felt a lot of relief. It was just one thing that I didn't have to continue to process. It was one thing that I didn't have to continually work on every day to become okay with. And had it remained, then I'm sure I would have figured it out. But it was certainly nice to have had that. Right. And I think as well, I didn't really realize this at the time, but that period of time from separation to them splitting up, because that was such a significant length of time, it also completely closed the door for me, the being like us two getting back together at the time. It was like, because obviously I was still going there quite regularly. I was picking the kids up. I'd even go to their house and do their bedtime routine and bath them and read the stories and things like that. But because of the romantic door was like definitively shut, it really helped me focus on this is now the problem that I have to solve. And as an eternal problem solver, so I've always been, then it's okay, I just need to figure out what it is I need to do. I need to figure out how to do this. And that's exactly what I started to do. And it's that process that I then now help my current clients with. I interrupted that. I apologize.
No, that's okay. And I guess, as you mentioned, often when relationships end in that way, it's one person making that choice. And it can be tough to accept because you didn't really have a say in it, right? Had you been given an opportunity, perhaps you could have had more of an input. And to your point earlier, it's like the rug gets pulled out from underneath you. Now, it may be hard to see it this way, and perhaps some people never see it that way, but when one person makes that choice of going outside of the marriage, there's a lot of pain that they're perhaps dealing with, right? Because then they're seeking out whatever fulfillment they're getting. And often it is a form of instant gratification, but you're seeking it out externally rather than perhaps looking within yourself to see, okay, what's missing here? How can I fill my own cup rather than getting someone else to do it? And often because of that, a lot of these relationships start on shaky foundation. And the statistics don't lie, because a lot of these relationships don't last. And I know that from personal experience too, because the foundation is so shaky. Everything is built upon a lie.
Exactly.
Or it's built on, again, it's that instant gratification that it's built on. Well, did any of that, looking at it from that perspective, that perhaps this person is hurting and that's why she went in this direction, was any of that occurring to you? And obviously it's hard when you're going through your own pain.
Yeah.
But I guess the question really is, how have you been able to let go and not have resentment, especially for the mother of your children?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly to begin with, I couldn't understand it. Mm-hmm. But this was probably before it actually being confirmed. This was my brain already going through the process as though it was definitely happening, even though I didn't have like hard evidence to support it. It was predominantly subjective, circumstantial at best. I did understand in a lot of ways. And I know how humans work. Everything you've just spoken about. We tend to seek pleasure and avoid pain. And that's usually in exchange for embracing discomfort and delaying gratification. generally speaking. Most people take the shorter route. That's why high sugar food's so appealing. That's why social media is so appealing. That's why sex and drugs and alcohol and all these things, because they offer that exact thing, a short-term high, if you like. And I also recognized that it wasn't just an overnight thing either. It was a gradual thing. And there's one thing I've learned from my own experience as well as watching others is often it only takes, it's interesting. I remember when I read the Atomic Habits by James,
James Clear.
Yeah, James Clear, yes. When I remember reading that and I read that post-divorce, thinking that it's this 1% change, these tiny little changes that add up to so much more, and you don't notice the 1% changes. That's the point. It's this tiny little tweak every day. Let's say, for example, they're having a conversation and there's just one word that's just introduced into the conversation that's maybe just on the edge of what's comfortable in terms of, is this an appropriate word to use as a within boundaries, given that I'm in a committed primary relationship, I'm married. And okay, to begin with, that word might feel a little bit uncomfortable. But as the day, once it's been introduced, then a couple of days later, that word then becomes normal. And then so on. And if you, and of course, this is only just like one word. What about if it's, you know, a behavior? Maybe they're out in the street and they rub arms. There's that first physical touch. Again, to begin with, that was a boundary that wouldn't have happened. And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, we've done it now. So again, you just you don't really notice these changes as they happen. Of course, that doesn't make the final, like the point where they're very consciously aware that they are breaking a boundary, they are breaking trust, choosing to be unfaithful. Of course, it doesn't change that. But what led up to it can often go unseen, I think. And I think in this case, this probably was true as well. So I felt like I understood it. And I actually had quite a lot of compassion for her, despite being obviously very hurt. And I wasn't prepared to just walk away from the marriage either. I actually wanted to actively work on the marriage. But there were some boundaries that I put in place. And that was, obviously, he needed to be out of our lives. We'd have to cut all contact. And I wanted her to really want to make the relationship work. Like, I want to want me, even though she'd said that she no longer was in love with me. I wanted that had to at least be a goal. And I also didn't want to stay together just because it was the easiest thing to do, just because the kids, just logistics, money, finance, all the things. Right. And ultimately, she couldn't comply with all of those things, which is why I followed through on my boundary and decided that, okay, in that case, that's not what I'm not going to, because she wasn't making a decision for me. So I made the decision and we separated and divorced. Sorry, I've forgotten what the initial question was now, but.
No, I think it was just having an understanding for what was going on for her.
Yes. I honestly did. I had much less understanding. I do now, but at the time, I definitely did. I could only see it. He was just having his cake and eating it. He literally lived 200 yards from where we did. And it really was the definition of crap on your own doorstep. And the fact that he was a friend as well, so it was like that double betrayal. So that was it was tough. He had nothing to lose,
right?
I think that well he's far less to lose. And I think I found that really selfish and really careless. It's sad. On the flip side, my wife having an affair is probably the best thing that's ever happened to me. It's deepened my connection with my children. In a lot of ways, it's deepened my connection with her. It's obviously completely changed my career path. And I'm now using that. And now for the first time, I really do feel like I know what I want to do for the rest of my life. Having spent the first 40 years of my life nearly not really knowing. I've always enjoyed the work that I've done, but I've never really felt that fulfillment. And now I can honestly say I do feel that fulfillment, excitement. And then, interestingly enough, so we'd obviously separated, divorced, They remained together for a period of time. We focused on our active co-parenting. We then spent a couple of years just having our separate lives, but looking after the kids and doing all the things. And then actually we are now back together as well. And so we started dating again, just again, but with those same sort of boundaries and guidelines in place of, are we doing this for the right reason? We've both done work on ourselves in the interim. We're not the same people we were when we got married. We're not the same people we were just before we got divorced. And actually, we've learned a lot more about each other in that time. So yeah, in terms of like your final part of what you last said, in terms of carrying that ongoing resentment, no, there is zero. I have zero resentment because I wouldn't be in a relationship. I wouldn't even consider risking being in a relationship if I still felt that. Mm-hmm. And I don't at all. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's another question, I think, because you mentioned earlier where you were opposed to the idea of getting married for what you had witnessed as a child. Is there any part of you that feels that perhaps going into that, just having that in the back of your mind, became a self-fulfilling prophecy and kind of recreated a similar situation?
It's interesting. That is a question I've definitely asked myself.
Yeah.
And I think, I've always been very much, I almost don't like admitting it, but I like to plan. And I've always been, actually, one of the things that's come up most for me over the last few years with all the coaching that I've been doing, myself coaching particularly, is this desire for control. And of course, that's pretty normal, actually, across many humans, this desire to know what the outcome is going to be. And I suppose it makes sense because everything we do is because of how we think it's going to make us feel. So we're planning in the hope that we're going to feel better or at least stop feeling so crap. It's like, that's really the objective. And I often thought, it's interesting, I'd always predicted, and I said it out loud as well on more than one occasion. Actually, I don't think I've shared this before, but and I definitely felt it myself, was me and her were both very different in terms of how we handle our emotions. I've always been much like, if something comes up, I feel the feels and I want to deal with the situation because I don't like carrying that and I recognize that it can be resolved. She's much more, that's not how she processes it at all. She needs time. She time to process. And I think I spent a lot of my relationship expecting her to be different when it came to how she handled her emotions. And of course, the reality was she wasn't going to change. And that was really all. The problem was my expectation, not her. The moment I released that expectation, because at the end of the day, I had 12 years of evidence to support that she wasn't going to change it. I was still thinking, if you just, then that we wouldn't be in this situation. But what from that, I predicted that she would gradually move apart and it would build up in baby steps over time to the point where she looked back and didn't realize how far away she'd got. And that's exactly what happened. It's like she, at some point there was some fork in the road. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure up to a certain point we could have easily pulled it back. But because that fork in the road wasn't communicated, and I thought everything was just normal and okay, and this is how it should be. Yet she was clearly obviously feeling or stopped no longer feeling something. It finally got to a point where she did turn around. It's like, oh my God, I don't even know who I'm living with anymore. I don't recognize him. I don't remember why we got together. These kinds of things. And it's taken obviously a lot of work and conversation. And actually there's been much of what's happened since we divorced that has helped reignite that for both of us to really ask those questions. Why were we together? What was it? And of course, we're not trying to replicate what came before. That really isn't what we're trying to do now. We're recognizing it as, okay, we obviously have, there are some advantages, of course. We have the same children. It's pretty handy. We're not blending families and things like that. So that makes that part easier. But that just is, to me, that's a bonus rather than a reason. And that's really the cost. But yeah, maybe. If I was coaching a client, I would probably tend to believe that it was self-fulfilled in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like admitting that, though.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I guess another thing, and you talked about making the kids a priority, and
yeah.
From personal experience, what I realize is the best thing I can do for my children is to take care of myself first,
yeah.
to fill my cup first.
Honestly, that was the most significant shift for me in my own healing journey.
Yeah.
And I think probably that's also why I felt a little bit of resentment to begin with, because I was, my brain was telling me I need to focus on the kids completely. Like, they have to be. In fact, that was also the message I was getting externally as well. Just for now, let's just focus on the kids. You've got these two beautiful young children. They were 3 and 6 at the time. This is where all your energy needs to be. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to argue with that. And it's what I wanted as well.
Yeah.
But that was probably fueling this resentment, because I wasn't really doing it from a true place. And I wasn't really paying attention to how I was feeling. It was like, I'm going to do it regardless. I'm going to do this even if it is awful. I'm gonna sacrifice my own well-being to satisfy the needs of my children. And that seems like such, it's like, I'm sure there'll be some people listening thinking, yeah, obviously, isn't that what you do? And but actually, no. The key turning point for me was once I recognized that if I put myself on the top of the pile for me, and I prioritize my self-care, my self-love, my self-worth, everything over and above everybody else, my children included, then they got the best version of me, which is actually way better than I could have offered as this slightly resentful, slightly misaligned motivation to fulfill and try and influence and control the thoughts and feelings of other people, even if those other people are my own children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Making that connection made all the difference when it came to finally, I suppose that was like the door that opened that allowed me to start to heal. Because what that also did for me, not only did I recognize that within my relationship with my children, but I recognized it now all of a sudden. It then became apparent that, well, that was true of all of my relationships. Mm-hmm. No longer do I see the utility in being an eternal people pleaser, trying to satisfy the needs. And again, reflecting back, I spent a lot of my life, I always describe myself as a jack of all trades. Well, that was one thing, but also almost a bit chameleon. Like, I could adapt to any different group of people. And I often found that growing up, I had lots of groups of friends, but they were very separate from each other. Mm. And I would be almost a different human in each one. And I didn't really feel like I was not being true to myself, but it's hard to argue now. I clearly was trying to satisfy the needs of others rather than truly being who I was. I was dependent on external validation and all the things. So, yeah, that opened the door to that in a completely different light and changed my whole life, actually, as a result.
For sure. Yeah, and I think that's very, I guess, common in terms of people pleasing now. And I guess going around it a second time now, coming back and rekindling that relationship, do you have different boundaries, or what are things that you've put in place to ensure that, like you said, you've done the work on yourself to fill your cup first, that your wife is doing that this time around?
Yeah. Sure.
And I guess there's that fear around, okay, do we expose the children to something again? Because for them, it's like a bit of a roller coaster, right? Parents
of
are
course.
Back together. There's fears around that too, right?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. But it's also true that, let's say, for example, that we'd not got back together and we'd both formed longer-term relationships with new people, and that introduces, maybe they've got kids, maybe there's extra things going on there. Actually, if those relationships came to an end, then that would also be pretty awful.
Yes.
Again, it's not that I dismiss the argument that I don't want to put my children through that roller coaster, but really to truly do that would be for me to no longer be in a relationship with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be the only safe way of guaranteeing that. So I try not to really think of it that way at all.
Right.
In terms of the way that the relationship's approached now, yes, one of the things that I mentioned before was that we'd discussed our wants and desires and things early on in the relationship, but then didn't revisit them.
Right.
Life just kind of took over. And we followed the Western society expectation of how you should live a life as adult, heterosexual, male, female. You get married, have kids, buy a house, do all the things, work till you retire, and followed that path. And again, not knowingly or willingly in that sense, but that's definitely what we did. Whereas now, when we now talk about what it is that we want, and we revisit that as well quite regularly. And there's no, I recognize that not everything has to be infinite. Some things do come to a close. And I don't want the relationship to end. Of course I don't. But if that is what it did, then the way that it would end this time would be very different to how it ended last time. I'm very confident of that. But most importantly, I think it's just the fact that we're just communicating so much better in terms of what does, are we happy with how things are now? Are we happy with our living arrangements? Are we happy with the kids? Are we happy with, I don't mean the kids, but in terms of the way that we're parenting, are we happy with the amount of time we're spending together and the dreams and goals that we do have and holidays and date nights and all of the different things? Are we still aligned on these? And where we aren't, of which, because there obviously are things where we're not aligned on, it's okay, that's fine. You get that filled from elsewhere and I'll get my bit filled from elsewhere. We're not dependent on each other to fill each other's cups. Like you say, we're responsible for our own cup. Right. Much of that I can get filled from my partner, and there is a good chunk of it I can get filled elsewhere. And she has the same option as well.
Right.
And yeah, I think that's, it's really just keeping that open communication there and just being clear about what our wants and needs are and removing the people pleasing and also accepting each other for who we are. I remember the moment I released my expectation of how she should handle her emotions, it just completely changed for me. Everything changed because I was no longer annoyed by it. It no longer bothered me anymore. It's just like, that's who she is. And why would I actually want, why do I want her to be different? It's the question. What am I making that mean? And so she didn't have to change. Yet I feel a lot better because of the way I was thinking about it. Right. So I apply that in so many areas.
Yeah, no, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. And going about it in a different way too, for sure. And recognizing a lot of the changes that you needed to make yourself. I appreciate you sharing all that. And again, I want to thank you for coming on here and being so open and vulnerable. I appreciate it very much. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
For listeners that do want to find you or get a hold of you or would like to learn more about what it is that you do, what are some ways they can do that?
Yeah, certainly. Well, probably the most effective way would be to listen to my podcast. You're already a podcast listener if you're listening to this. And that is called After the Affair. And of course, there is an episode where I've got Furkan on as well. So please come and take a listen to that. But beyond that, you can find much more about me on my website, which is lifecoachluke.com, all one word. And my social media handles are my life coach Luke, again, all one word.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
More than welcome.
Thank you for checking out this episode with Luke. As always, please leave a review or a comment in the comment section. I love hearing from all of you. And if you haven't done so, please subscribe to the podcast, either on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube, or all three. That's the best and easiest way to support the podcast. And please check out the sponsors in the description. Thank you again, and until next week.